Welcome to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP, the federal leader in retirement planning seminars. Join NITP for an hour of plain talk on planning your future. You've got questions, they've got answers.
Welcome to NITP's For Your Benefit. We're here to talk about life begins at retirement. And to lead us in that discussion is Dan Seip. Dan's a financial planner, and he's with Thomas Lee, financial planner, and these two guys run an outfit called Serving Those Who Serve and other things, too.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, this should be fun. And this is it. So life begins at retirement. So should I retire? Or I'd probably come to you, and if I came to you and said, I want to retire, what would you say to me?
Well, hopefully you've given us a little bit of a runway. if you came up to us and said, I want to retire next week, that becomes a bit of a challenge. The big thing about retiring from federal service, at one point in time, it was very easy. If you could count to 40, you were in great shape. You'd have an 80% pension based on your high three. A little more complicated now. Have to do the right things with your TSP. Really, what Tom and I believe, and jump in anytime. Tom's the smart one. I'll just let you know that. I'm the partner who's unburdened by genius in this relationship. The longer we do this, the more we come to realize that habits build wealth. Habits build financial security. Advisors like us can help or hinder. We try and hinder as little as possible and help wherever we can. So if somebody comes to me and says, I want to retire, first thing we're going to do is take a look at what you have and get a sense of.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think having complete information is one of the most important things, because you might be ready to retire in one aspect of your finances. Like, you might think you have enough money, for example, in a TSP combined with the federal annuity. But there might be some pitfalls in other aspects of the finances, like insurance, for example.
Okay.
Sure.
But serving those who serve. So your mission, besides financial planning, we'll dig back into it, but it's got a nice ring to it.
Well, it sort of goes back to my father-in-law passed away when I was very new in this industry, like less than a year. And he was a retired auditor with GSA. And as the person in the family with quote unquote air quotes experience in that area fell to me to help my mother-in-law settle his affairs. And he was a smart guy. I mean, they sent him to Japan to teach auditing techniques. And like so many of our clients, if he got two pieces of paper in the same day, and one had to do with his job and one had to do with his benefits, I know which one he read and I know which one he meant to. So he had a couple of misconceptions that led to the number that he had written down in the book for my mother-in-law to expect, and what she got were different. It wasn't a tragic difference. It didn't put her out of her home, anything like that. But I'd like to point out, I was the only son-in-law in the family, and I got to explain it to her. So that was a bit of an emotional experience for me. And I was concerned that there might have been some other things that he just hadn't seen or missed. So I was able to contact his agency. They were terrific about sending me documents. So I just kept reading and reading and reading. And thankfully, there weren't any more surprises. And the ones that were there weren't the fault of the program. But there I was 6 weeks later, head full of knowledge, and I already had some clients who worked in federal service, and I said, hey, here's some things you might want to know, and that really got it started. Now, nearly 30 years later, if I'm talking to someone who's not a Fed, it's probably by accident or I was referred to one of their children or that sort of thing.
All right. When somebody comes in to see you, what's your first impression when you look at, I would imagine that you asked for some information about
Absolutely.
Their finances. What's your common impression, be it good or be it bad, when you look at that? Because, I mean, they're coming to you because they figure they need help. They're not coming to you because, you know, it's a free dinner at some jazzy restaurant.
Oh, we don't do that.
I didn't think you did that.
No, we're strictly by referral.
Was that subtle? Anyway. So when they come in, sometimes I'm an accountant. The rest of the people listening know I'm an accountant, and I look at the tax return, and you can't always say what you see. You see,
sure,
decent size income, too much debt, too much interest, and you have to be diplomatic as to how you do that. But let's say somebody comes in. Now, if it's all aces, there's something to say, let's make the aces better.
Sure.
But what about if they're holding nothing?
Well, I think then, I think then we're probably talking about those habits. And if they're not there, we have to help them get them. And again, Tom, jump in wherever. In almost 30 years, every person we've ever encountered that achieved financial success, financial stability, financial comfort, whatever term you want to use, there's three things that are almost never lacking. The first is they managed and ultimately eliminated their installment debt. So if they've got that, we've got to go to work to help them get rid of it. Second, they tend to create a wedge between their income and their lifestyle. And they grow lifestyle more slowly than income. So they defend that wedge over time. That's really where wealth is built. And the third, we've seen it over and over again. They take advantage of mental capital. They keep learning. They acquire skills, knowledge, relationships that they can leverage for higher and higher income. So if somebody comes in late in the game, many times we have to shoot straight with them and say, you're going to be working for a while. There's time. There's not time to waste. And if the habits aren't in place, we have to work with them to get there. Tom, what do you think?
No, I mean, you know, we don't see complete disasters. Compared to the private sector. Because, you know, the federal government provides a lot of what you need. They have the TSP, obviously, the federal annuity, and then Social Security, in particular for FERS employees. So we find that there's not a huge amount of credit card debt, one of the things that obviously federal employees have is they have incredibly consistent income, and it's easy to plan that way. When you're working with people in the private sector, their income can vary wildly, and it's interesting. It's human psychology. I think that when your income goes up, you spend more. And then when it drops, you tend to spend at the same level, and that's when you can get into trouble. And we just don't see that with federal employees. What we typically find is, really, I would say that one of the most common questions we get is, especially with married couples, is what to do about survivor benefits. We find that.
Well, that's at least a couple of sessions on that.
Yeah, there's a couple of sessions, and people think it's all or nothing. I think. Frequently people ask, does it make sense to take it or not take it? Do I have enough money not to take it? Should I have life insurance? That comes up all the time.
That brings us back to our favorite term that drives people crazy, which is it depends.
Right.
See, got in harmony there.
Okay. So the first impression may be, let's say it's not good. I mean, if it's good, then it's just how to grow it and protect it. But if it's not good, what would you say to that same person if they had visited you 15 years earlier?
Well, that's always better. The longer runway you have for takeoff, the better the flight's going to go, I think. So, backing it up 15 years, we'd probably take a hard look at if debt was accumulating, why? Why is that happening? Do a cash flow analysis with them. But Tom's right. The folks in federal service really are a thrifty lot in a lot of instances. So we don't run into it that much. But when we do, it's a situation where we have to talk about, let's build the wedge. Let's take a look at where money's going. What decisions are you making? Are you making decisions that are artificially enriching someone else? We'll never be in the business of telling people what they can and can't do with their money, but we'll be forever in the business of pointing out when their decisions are making someone else rich at their own expense. And typically, if you have a lot of credit card debt, that's exactly what you're doing.
Okay, so if you got a hold of somebody mid-career, now in today's market with the feds, the CSRS are, like you said, I just need to
count
know,
to 40.
40.
Yep.
Count
yes,
to 40.
Right.
Well, there are fewer and fewer of them.
Sure.
So we're seeing mid-career, beginning career, FERS individuals. Let's look at the mid-career.
Yeah.
I don't know if they come to you at mid-career. Is your profile of your client?
They do, actually, because, again, we're really blessed and fortunate that our clients are very generous introducing us to friends and colleagues. And we do get a fair amount of emails that say, now this guy's a lot younger than me. I think if he got, if you, sounds terrible to say it, but if you guys got a hold of him right now, you could save them, or whatever, you could do a lot of good for them.
Sure.
And so, yeah, we actually meet a fair number in that group. And in that instance, again, you know, we're gonna look at the cash flow side of things. We're gonna look at whether they are doing things within the TSP that makes sense. You'd be surprised, even to this day, the number of folks that have kind of a 50-50 allocation in the TSP, where it's half C, half G, and you really do bump into that, or you run into situations where you'll be looking at it and, well, I don't have anything in international right now because international is terrible. And there, I'll let Tom elaborate on our philosophy with investments, but the methodology that we follow.
It's all over the map with the TSP. I mean, we see people who have 100% in the G fund. I mean, Bob, you might see that too.
There's a fair percent.
Exactly. Yeah. Sure. And the G fund is excellent for what it does. I mean, it gives a very high guaranteed rate of return, which you just don't see these days. And obviously high is relative.
It's still very low.
But I mean, you know, so in general, we find that federal employees are pretty conservative. I see frequently 20% in each of the five options. I see that, right? And you can tell that they got the paperwork to start the TSP, and then they
2020.
Yeah, right, and they just never changed. So there's no real strategy.
The other thing that we bump into is if they do have assets away from the TSP, they're very rarely coordinated. There's no overarching asset allocation that is being used. Tom, why don't you talk a little bit about that?
Well, you know, we're seeing people more and more often, especially under the FERS program, who may have come from the private sector and they have IRAs. Right now, in looking at the entire financial plan, you need to coordinate the IRA, for example, with the TSP, because they're tax-wise, in general, they're pretty similar.
Why don't you explain what coordination means as far as the asset allocation and being represented in all the classes?
Sure.
Sorry, I'm doing your job there, Bob.
I'm leaving.
You can't leave. You're a legend.
Like we were saying before, we see a lot of people who just have money in the G fund. We see people who have 20% in each of the five options. And so is there really a strategy there? And so the one that we espouse is a strategy called modern portfolio theory. And every once in a while, we do see someone who is using modern portfolio theory for their finances. It's rare, but we do see it. And basically, the father of modern portfolio theory won the Nobel Prize in economics in 1990. And it wasn't about simply don't put all your eggs in one basket. It was about diversifying across all asset classes. For example, Bob, I think you mentioned it earlier. We see very few people investing significantly in the I fund. And what's interesting is the I fund has underperformed, for example, over the past 10 years, and has certainly underperformed the C and S fund over the past 5 years. That's a C in the cat. C is in cat and S is in Sam. So we don't see I fund, but it's important to diversify overseas because that incredibly it reduces your risk. And that's something that Harry Markowitz, 1990 Nobel Prize winner in economics, that's something that he proved. Not necessarily higher return, but certainly reducing your risk by investing overseas.
I guarantee you there's some people out there who are on the active management side that have steam coming out their ears right now. you have your point of view, and that's great. Tom,
right.
And I have ours.
Yeah, that's a good point, Dan, because modern portfolio theory is largely a passive strategy. Okay, so we see this a lot, by the way. We see people going in and out of investments in the TSP. I wouldn't say day trading, but certainly when they feel like for example, the fiscal cliff.
Right.
Remember that happened?
Yes.
Yeah, sure. So
a lot of folks bunkered into the G.
They did. They said, you know what? We're going to sell. I sold my stock investments in the TSP, and I put it in the G fund, and I wanted to ride it out. This is the fiscal cliff.
Well, the tricky part with that is you have to be right twice. Because if you're going to stay out forever, that's fine, but you have to figure out where you come back in. And the problem is, as you see that descent, everything reinforces your decision to have gotten out. It's falling, you're going, I'm right. Then you get to the bottom, it's like, well, I'm still right, and it starts back up. Well, I'm still more right than wrong. And, you know, our observation with clients that have attempted to do that, and, you know, we can always tell because they missed their review. And they come back in the next year and they're very sheepish about it and said, well, I went into the G, I didn't tell you. But if they did come back in, they come back in pretty much at the same level. Because that they don't feel safe until they've gotten back to where it was, in which case did you really accomplish anything? So trying to time it is a tricky proposition.
It's very difficult. And if you remember the fiscal cliff, the stock market rebounded very, very quickly. In fact, it rebounded even before year end.
Sure.
So, you know, if you had missed out on those first couple of weeks, it really would have hurt your return.
Well, actually, you're talking about debt ceiling.
We had
people that came back, you know, and at December said, we're going over the cliff. And this is what's going to happen. Well, theoretically, air quotes again, we went over the cliff and the market kind of went, meh. You know, it didn't crater.
Okay. Do you find that your clients are sometimes not motivated, but influenced by the water cooler talk?
Well, why don't you take up Daniel Kahneman? And,
sure.
By the way, y'all, that's not a technical term, water cooler talk.
So, yes. I mentioned the 1990 Nobel Prize winner in economics, Harry Markowitz. You know, we take an academic approach with our sort of investment philosophy. And the 2002 Nobel Prize winner in economics, his name is Daniel Kahneman. And what's interesting about Nobel Prizes in economics is it's not that often that they have anything to do with personal investing. It's frequently something that's
more obscure.
Yeah, very esoteric. So when someone wins a Nobel Prize in economics, for example, 2002, last year, 2013 – Eugene Fama, very pertinent to personal finance. But getting back to the water cooler, Daniel Kahneman, he was a behavioral economist. And basically what he proved is that we are hardwired to make mistakes investing. And in fact, it may be even drilled into us from an evolution standpoint. Right.
Oh, so this is getting deep.
Right. You think about it. Moving in a herd when you're a hunter-gatherer is a pretty good way to stay alive. Talking to all your friends about where your money should go, maybe not such a good idea. It's a great way to find an honest mechanic. It's a great way to find a great plumber. And we all do. We refer to one another. But when you move into a situation where what's everybody in this office doing, that's what I'll do. That's a pretty small sample. And yet you feel comfortable because you're in that herd. Sorry.
Right. No, exactly. So there are several factors that sort of are hardwired into us that really lead us to make mistakes investing. And, you know, one, for example, is herd mentality, Dan mentioned. Another is recency bias. Mm. So, I mean, I can't tell you how many times when after the financial crisis, when the market crashed in 2008 – and then bottomed in 2009. On the way back, when the market was coming back, it was the other shoe's going to fall. It's going to happen again. It's going to get worse. And it never did. I mean, the stock market had a couple bumps along the way. But just this morning, it looks like the S&P 500, if it hasn't broken 2000, it's about to, which would make it an all-time high. And there have been many all-time highs this year. So I think the bottom line is to say that it is really difficult to impossible to time the stock market.
Now, when you sit down with a new client and you make comments, and let's just say that you're looking at something that you say, this needs to be fixed. Mm. How do they respond to that? Do they respond to that initially by, well, what do you all know? And then you say, well, you're here. But the other question would be, do they get ticked? Are they appreciative of it? Maybe they're appreciative. You tell me.
You know, federal employees are just like anybody else. I mean, there's a wide range of personalities.
But I would say we haven't had a whole lot of people that get ticked and feel that we're belittling them by something like that.
Sure.
Plus, we're very gentle. but actually, the one thing that I hear more than anything else is almost a mea culpa. You know, oh, I know I should have, and I know I should have, and I know I should have. So literally, we have to spend a little bit of time on, you can't do anything about the past except learn from it. So sure, could you have done things? No. There's time. There's not time to waste. And if you're beating yourself up, that's the definition of wasting time. You're not helping yourself move ahead. So generally, if and I'd imagine this is the case when they seek out advisory help anywhere, they kind of know that there are things that they don't know, and they're looking for someone to fill that in. So if we say, and I think again, we're not brutal when we say, it's not, wow, that was really stupid. Why'd you do that? We don't do that.
Yeah, so. You know, Dan, that's a good point. I mean, people who are looking for a financial planner in general are people who know they haven't done planning, right? I mean, people who think they have it all together, don't meet with us, or people who don't think they have anything. That's another very common area. Is that they say, well, look, I don't have any money to invest. I don't really need retirement planning, right? But we do. I mean, they do. We look at
They definitely need a strategy. If nothing else, there needs to be some overarching plan that's saying, again, going back to asset allocation, we're going to have this much in the C, this much in the F, this much in the G, this much in the I. We're going to keep that in balance. We're going to take a look at even if you don't think it's much, those other IRAs that you have from years ago, keep those in balance. And then we're going to have conversations about, as we're moving closer and closer to retirement, that allocation's got to modify. You know, it's got to moderate, because when you follow modern portfolio theory, if you've got someone that's within 5 years, they're not 100% in the market.
Mm-hmm.
So what was interesting is I've been doing this close to 30 years, so I've got a couple of crashes under my belt. The one thing that I observed from this last one is the folks in federal service may not have liked what their balances looked like, but they weren't worrying about their jobs. So that's a great stabilizer. And two, that if they were within 5 years, we probably had a whole lot in F&G. And yes, in the vortex of fear that was October of 08, everything but the G dropped. But you saw in 09, bonds started to rally a bit. So again, it's really a matter of seeing where somebody is relative to the length of time, to the runway. Because we do see situations where people may be overly aggressive with the length of time they say they have.
Yeah, we're seeing that now. You know, and again, it gets,
of course,
back to,
the market's doing well.
Exactly. It gets back to her mentality. And when the market's doing well, people tend to invest more in the stock market. Why is it the I fund has less money in the C and the S fund?
Oh, I know. Because there's trouble in Europe.
Right, because there's trouble in Europe.
There's trouble everywhere. So,
including River City.
You know, frequently it's a good time to invest. Like if the I fund isn't doing as well, then it's a good time to buy in. And you do that automatically when you rebalance a portfolio. So rebalancing a TSP, it may or may not be obvious, but it's very, very important to do.
Okay, can I back up? And I'm going to just pretend I came in and you mentioned the term risk and you mentioned rebalancing. Let me ask you risk.
Sure.
If I don't know any better, risk is risky. But trying to tell somebody a government bond, a G fund, there's no risk, doesn't mean that the C fund is risky.
Correct.
But it's not as guaranteed.
Well, and Tom, jump in on this. If you go back to Markowitz, and we spend some time talking about this, with clients, you need to get to common language. Because over 30 years, I've had people come in and say, Dan, you need to understand I'm really aggressive. And I look at their TSP and they're 100% in C. Now, technically speaking, 100% stock allocation is aggressive, but with no international, it's not really a true aggressive posture. Or have somebody come in and say, you need to understand I'm really conservative. And their TSP is 100% in the C fund.
Oh, I see that. That's true. That's true.
People will say, to get to what does that mean to you
relative to what's the term. Aggressive. Yeah.
And so when we say something like aggressive, we spend a little bit of time differentiating between aggressive and speculative. And a lot of times when people think risk, aggressive, speculative is what they're thinking about. Give you an example. My nephew worked in the mortgage business for years, and because he's my favorite nephew and I love him, I kept the ticker of the company that he was with on my crawl, and it really took a beating during the financial crisis and got down into very, very, very low dollar denominations. And I'll never forget, I saw this little thing pop up where somebody had bought $1 million worth of it in a single day. Well, it was down around a couple of bucks a share. That's, in my definition, a speculative investment because there's not a lot of room between $2 and zero. And so when you talk about a Markowitz model, an aggressive model simply doesn't have any bonds or fixed in it. It would be allocated across all three asset classes.
Right. Why don't you jump in on that? And in terms of speculative, there is nothing speculative. There are no speculative investments.
Nope.
In the TSP. Now you can make it speculative by trying to time when you think investments are going to do well, but that's pretty much an exercise in futility.
Plus, I think you're probably going to drive the thrift people crazy if you're making that many changes that fast.
Okay, so then...
Did that answer your question?
Yeah, and then rebalancing, though. Mm-hmm. All right, so we're okay with rebalancing, and we're okay with risk?
Yeah, well, let's talk about rebalancing.
For me, sure. Now, you know, I'm the one coming in, and you guys are talking all this stuff, and I'm going...
I'm sorry, Bob, that's a bad question. No plan for you.
Okay, all right, I'll go home.
Yeah, so rebalancing, if you think about what rebalancing the TSP does, it forces you to buy low and to sell high in a systematic way, right? Because let's say you have a target allocation.
But not on a wholesale basis.
Right, not on a wholesale basis, just on the margins. And I'll explain what I mean. So let's say that your target allocation contains 30% in the C fund. And then it contains 20% in the I fund, which is the international fund. Well, the international fund, as we mentioned, has not been performing as well. So the C fund has been the best performing component of the TSP this year. So the C and the S fund together. So if you were going to be disciplined and rebalance, what you'd be doing is you'd be selling some of the C fund to maintain the 30% allocation. And taking that portion and investing it in the I fund.
To sort of give you a visual, ask the folks in Radio Land to sort of imagine a pie chart. And if, let's say, in large companies, domestic U.S. large companies, you're supposed to have 40%. This is purely a hypothetical. And if that particular asset class, say the S&P 500, goes up 30%.
Which is the C fund.
Right.
Okay.
The likelihood that you still have only 40% there is relatively small unless everything else in the portfolio went up by the same amount. Now, at the same time, if we see a situation where the I fund lost money, so it contracted and you were supposed to have 20% in that, and you look at it and now it's 15 and your C fund is now instead of 40, it's close to about 46 or 47. What Markowitz would call upon us to do is take some away from the C fund that has grown and put it into the other areas so we come back to all of those percentages. So if it's 40 in one, if it's 20 in another, if it's 20 in another, that sort of thing. And you keep tabs on it. Where that really ties in with Daniel Kahneman is you're not going on intuition, you're not going with the herd.
That goes against what we want to do.
Right.
We look at our TSP statement, we see the best performing component of it, and we want to invest more in it.
Yep.
So for the uneducated me, is that selling high and buying low?
That's a good thing.
Well, yeah. I've never done that. I do the other.
I doubt that.
But if I take something out of one of the funds that's doing well and
put
some of that money,
put
so
some
I'm,
that's
I'm
doing
selling
bad, yeah.
high and I'm capturing some yep. of the gains and all of it's tax deferred. So I like this. And then I'm buying low for the one that hopefully is going to bounce back. Is that rebalancing?
That's rebalancing.
Now I understand it.
Okay, you're set, Bob.
And not only that, not only is it sort of systematically selling high and buying low, but you're also reducing risk when you do that by maintaining the allocation.
Sure.
Because if you just let the portfolio go, then you're going to be overweighted in some asset classes, which reduces your risk.
Okay. Probably with your clients, I'd imagine some of them are pre-retirement folks, and when they leave federal service, they can leave the money in the thrift.
Sure.
They can transfer it to an IRA, and in class we talk, sometimes you can transfer IRA money into the TSP. It's only the fully taxable portion, not the whole amount, but the bottom line is, how do you feel them out for that? I mean, I don't know if that's for everybody, if they did well in the thrift or you had them guided them through the thrift. What do you find? Well, they're probably coming to you to say, what do I do anyway? But
here we get back to our catchphrase. Say it with me, Tom. It depends.
Sure, absolutely.
Boy, you said that together. Did you practice that?
We've been together 15 years. We're like an old married couple now.
Yeah, so whether to transfer the TSP out to an IRA upon retirement. And by the way, maybe not many people know this, but there is a one-time in-service withdrawal that's allowed for federal employees who are over 859 and a half or over. So you don't have to be retired. Whether to transfer it out? Well, I mean, I think some of you who are listening out there read the article in the Washington Post.
Which was a reprint from Bloomberg.
That's right.
We'd actually seen it a couple weeks earlier.
It was in Bloomberg earlier. So we had already been getting questions from clients about this. Last week, I had several client meetings, and it just came up. Should I transfer money from my TSP to the IRA, or why did I transfer money from the TSP to the IRA? All right. So let's talk about some obvious things. There are five choices inside the TSP. So let's say, for example,
well, not counting the
L funds, right?
The
L funds are a combination of the five. So let's say you wanted to invest in stocks. You've been with the government.
Individual
stocks, correct? Let's say you're in the government your entire career. You've always wanted to invest in individual stocks, right? And you obviously you cannot do that in the TSP. Well, that would be a reason to roll the money.
Potentially,
sure. Now, are we an advocate of that? I would say largely no. And in fact, we may go counter to a lot of financial advisors in stating that the article that was written, we largely agree.
Yeah, we do.
What they were saying. Because the TSP gives you several things. It gives you rock bottom expenses. And that's absolutely true. It's black and white. I don't know if it's the lowest that there is out there, but if it's not,
I haven't seen too many lower.
Yeah, it's pretty close. And by the way, they talked about this in the article too. There is no such thing as a free IRA. There's no such thing. You can go into a low cost IRA because every financial instrument that you invest in out there has some cost to it.
Mm-hmm.
Explicit costs, implicit costs. So there's no free lunch that way. TSP is as close as you can get.
I guess we should also say, because I hear this in class a lot, well, the TSP doesn't charge anything.
Right.
And I even think the G funds got, I mean, let's not call it a load. It's a minor irritation,
it's an expense ratio.
Yeah.
And that's what exists within mutual funds. It's how the people who run the funds earn their money, and it's honest work. So they should get paid for
it.
We got
an emailer, actually.
An email. Okay.
This is our good friend on the West Coast. And he emailed in what happened to buying low and selling high. Volume is very low right now, and QE is about to end in October 2014.
Now you're talking to passive guys. So what that means is you're wanting the crystal ball. Did you bring the crystal ball, Tom?
I did not bring the crystal ball.
Then I am not calling you Swami. I'm sorry, I won't. And I'll let Tom elaborate on this because he's definitely the guy with the big brain where this comes in. I don't believe anybody truly knows what the market's going to do. literally when folks were talking about going over the fiscal cliff and saying they wanted to do this, that, or something else. In some ways, it made sense. I guess if we do go over the fiscal cliff, that could be bad, and therefore the market will do this. And then it didn't.
Yeah, and then, oh, then I'll have time to get back in, except you didn't.
Yeah.
Have time to get back in.
So,
right.
So when you talk about following Markowitz and Modern Portfolio Theory, you're setting up an allocation and you're sticking with it. You're rebalancing. You know, in times of great volatility, we might rebalance more. But in truth, that's more behavioral than it is something that's producing a huge benefit. Because when things are going badly, people want to do something. They desperately want to do something. And so they call us, you know, what can I do? What can I do? Well, we know pretty well that we're not going to hurt anybody when we rebalance.
Right. And speaking specifically to
sure.
QE, you know, quantitative easing, which is what the government has been doing to stimulate the economy, we have to understand that the stock market and by extension the C fund, the S fund, and the I fund, it's already priced in. It is already priced in that the government is going to ease back on their stimulus. So if they accelerate the easing back, then the stock market will drop. If they push it off into the future more, then the stock market will go higher. But we just can't know what they're going to do. We can't know. So,
and we also, even in those instances, we can't say with certainty how a billion people out there investing are going to react. It's
right.
it's a complex system. It's like the old jokes about the weather. If a butterfly flaps its wings in Hong Kong, it rains in New York. It's a complex system, and trying to predict it. And again, you know, I know there's active guys out there that have steam coming out of their ears right now listening to this. This is just our point of view. We will tell you what we know, what we don't know, what we believe, and label it as such. This is what we believe.
When you and we met before the show.
Sure.
And we've met a few times. We exchanged war stories and the like. But I remember you all said one thing. The proverbial three-legged stool for retirement for the FERS folks is the three, Social Security, the annuity, and the thrift, and probably there's a two-legged ladder for the CSRSers, but you all said, no, it's really a four-legged stool or a three-legged stool, and the additional, the one that people don't talk about is strategy.
The strategy, yeah.
And,
absolutely.
I mean, it hit me like a ton of bricks,
yeah.
And I go, hmm. Because,
wow.
no, it did,
thank
because, you.
You
know, talking with folks, and, you know, I'm not the world's greatest financial planner, but I talk to others, and there's no strategy. It's the water cooler. I'm following this, or I read this book, or I did this, or I took a webinar, and I learned some things from that, and that's where I'm going. But there wasn't a coordinated strategy with the rest. You know, why are we accumulating this money to help fund our retirement?
Sure.
And that strategy's got to include cutting debt. It's mm-hmm. got to include cutting expenses if that person has too much debt or too much expenses, or maybe they got lots of money. And I know you all have a charitable bent for those that would be very fortunate.
We do, and that goes even into the further sort of reaches of strategy. But I have to give credit to Dan. I mean, he came up with the
Dan who?
Wow.
The four-legged stool idea. I mean, if you think about the three-legged stool, right, there's the TSP, there's the federal annuity, and there's Social Security. And each one of them contains strategies in themselves. I mean, we spent a lot of the show talking about the TSP. But what do you do about the annuity? The most obvious probably is do you take survivor benefits or not?
Right? Or do you stay until 62 if you're FERS?
Oh, that's a good
and
point.
Pick up the 10% bump. You know, I joke about this with clients. I think I keep more people in federal service till 62 than retention bonuses because, you know, a lot of times, and this sort of goes back to the experience that I had with my father-in-law. And again, it's not the fault of the program. It's just when people get busy, and once again, those two pieces of paper, which one are they going to read? Which one are they going to scan? So literally, I'll have situations, and this is where the strategy comes in, where we'll say, now we've got a Roth TSP option, and we think having diversified income streams in retirement based on how they'll be taxed is a good idea, so I think we should go into the Roth. I can't go into the Roth. Why? I make too much money.
And we hear that a lot.
It's that conventional wisdom out there, but it's misapplied to what you can do in federal service. So as Tom says, for each one, there's a strategy. Listen to you and Tammy. Did a great piece where you were talking about who claims when in Social Security. You know, the husband delays, wife claims, then they come back and true it up. Bob, that's strategy. You have strategy.
I have another leg.
Yeah, and golf leg.
And so do the listeners, by the way. You listen to the show. If you're lucky enough to be having a seminar provided at your agency, take advantage of it.
Oh, absolutely.
Certainly not our competition, but actually we have good competition, so that's not fair to say. Take whatever you can to learn whatever you can, and you'll be, I think, a lot better off. So if I could, we're running about 9 minutes left. So could I do this? If you were, I always try to do this, beginning career, mid-career, pre-retirement. Sure. We've been hitting pretty hard late mid-career, pre-retirement. But if you were to get somebody early on in their career, what advice would you give them? I'm not talking about somebody that's out of school for a year or two. You know where that money's going.
Sure.
But after they've been out for 3, 4 years, 5 years.
Well, actually, we're blessed to have a situation where, Tom's terrifically young and good looking, and I'm old and not.
You too?
that we're being referred to children of clients. And so we have a generation coming up. You know, we just hired a guy for the firm who's 28, to sort of keep some continuity in there, because we're talking to people that are now 30 years younger than me. And what we really stress there is on the habits side. And don't live beyond
your
means.
Dan, you always say that. That's the most important thing.
Don't live beyond your means. Live below your means a little bit. And then raises, bonuses, good years move you ahead. Habits build wealth.
That's your catchphrase.
And it depends.
Yeah. Habits build wealth, and it depends. If you can get someone who is young and get them started, for example, saving in the TSP, getting a match. If they have a family, okay, taking advantage of the federal employee group life insurance. Because I think when you're young,
really
it's a pretty
cheap.
Good deal, right?
Really cheap.
Especially
for the survivor, for the people who would be your survivors, if you want to cover the wife and the kids, it's a higher benefit now. Mm-hmm. So the younger you are, the better deal it is, yeah.
Right. And just, again, taking a look at your entire financial picture and not have the attitude, well, I don't have any money. Okay. You should come up with a plan, because if you look at the numbers, the miracle of compound interest. I'm sure.
And don't try and make a killing. I mean, don't feel that you've when you're young, you've got the time horizon, you've got the runway. You can hit singles and win the game. Mm-hmm. You do not have to swing for the fences. So get that habit of thrift. And if you show me somebody who's in their mid 20s that's saving 20% of income, even a gifted planner can't mess that up.
As long as they're not going in and out of investments in the TSP. But yes, no, that's very true. If they're saving a good portion of their income, and you look at the compound interest over time, and I would encourage you to do that if you're young. I mean, I think it's fun to do that.
I do it with my kids.
Yeah, it's just get a compound interest calculator. They're all over the web, and just put in the numbers and see if you save $5,000 a year. See what it looks like when you turn 65.
Yep.
And be sure to include the match that you get with the TSP.
Sure.
The government gives you a 5% match.
But maximize that TSP contribution and sneak additional money away outside of the TSP. So that's the beginners. Mid-career, let's make sure that we've got a strategy, because we've got time, but we want to make sure that we're coordinating things properly. Because now your career's picking up speed. You're making more money, but things are getting more expensive. Now we've got to think in terms of how we're going to educate the kids. Should we buy a Virginia prepay if we live in Virginia? Should we go into 529 in case they don't want to go to James Madison or one of the great Virginia schools that we have? So you've got to start looking. And most of the time, people have all the data, but it's in files and it's in drawers and it's never out on the table at the same time. So that's why working from a model, looking at 27 different areas of a person's financial life, you get it all out on the table and you're talking about it and you see how it interacts. So should they be in a 529 plan? Should they be in the prepay? Those are strategic decisions. And then when you get to the later years, most of the time you're probably talking about an empty nest situation. So then you want to have conversations about, we don't have the same expenses we did. How much can we lay up now? This is our time. But you may be looking at leaving federal service and going to work for a consulting group or that sort of thing. Well, then you can really turbocharge your ability to do that. So it changes over time, but along the way, there's a through line of habits and strategy, habits and strategy, habits and strategy. And they modify as you go, but they're always there. Would you agree?
Absolutely.
How many people come into your office that know what they spend? Because I don't do what you do, but I kind of sort of do it with the questions. I say, I have $500,000 in my TSP. This is how much I'm going to get in my annuity and my Social Security. What do you think? And I
right.
go,
yeah.
How much do you spend?
Yeah, it's
20%
rare.
That are keeping it on Quicken or something like that. Mm-hmm. And invariably, they come in with that. They come in and here's my budget from Quicken and that sort of thing, because people ask the question, how much do I need?
Yeah.
And my question will be, how much does it cost to live in your world now? Because in almost 30 years, I have never had a client come in and sit down and say, I really want to have a standard of living that's a lot lower in retirement. So a lot of times what we'll do is do a cash flow analysis with them and just keep working to refine it, looking back, see where money's going. It's always instructive for them.
Okay, tell me about the near hopeless case that you had or cases that you've had, and how did you turn them? You know, you got the old car out of the barn, and you knew what was there.
Oh, nobody's without hope, Bob. Oh, I just said Bob Hope, Bob.
What do you do?
You know, I think we mentioned this before, but we don't see very many complete disasters.
It's true.
We see egregious mistakes. Like I'll give you an example. One of our clients never applied, you know, to get their federal annuity. she's been living all these years. She's been entitled to a federal annuity, and she never applied to get it. I tell her every year to do it, and she finally did. And she's getting an extra $1,000 a month.
Did the person not know that they were entitled, or they?
No, she knew.
It was inertia, and it was getting busy, and that sort of thing. It gets complicated. You know, life is complicated, and life intrudes. That's another one of our favorite phrases.
Right. So in terms of complete car crashes, we don't see that so much, but. We definitely do see people who need help in terms of saving more money.
We're also prepared to tell them the truth, even if it gets us fired.
Yeah,
which is, you are going to be working for at least X number of years longer, because here's what you have to do, because you it puts too much pressure on the asset if you're going to try and will it to grow faster. That's where you start moving into directions where you could make, as Tom calls, a crippling mistake.
Right. And you know, we see that. We see people making crippling mistakes, especially as it pertains to investing, timing the stock market. We saw it a lot with real estate.
Sure.
Do you remember back in 2005, 2007, through 2007? You know, real estate can't drop. It's a guaranteed investment.
Well, it was the irrational exuberance that left the stock market
exactly.
and went to the real estate market.
And you know, you look, Dan, over the span of your career, I've been in the business for 18 years.
That's code for old. Go ahead.
Span of your career, Dan. You know, you came into this business right before the crash of 1987.
Yeah.
And so how many people stayed in the stock market through the crash of 1987?
A whole bunch really flipped out, and it was a lightning crash, too.
Right.
And so a lot of them
never
jumped
got back
as
in.
An echo,
yeah.
but they also jumped as an echo. They got it after the crash had really hit.
Was that the 500-point drop when the Dow wasn't that high?
Program trading,
yeah.
You know, was,
yeah.
was
I remember it
was
yeah.
the one that was blamed
yeah.
for it.
Yeah.
And then you think of 1999, the late 90s, when I came into the business, it was all about the internet stocks. People were piling into internet stocks.
It's a new paradigm. It's a new economy. The old rules do not apply.
Yep, that was the most common phrase. It's a new economy. And then that bubble burst, and then we had the real estate bubble. So how many people do we know? How many people have we seen who basically rode all those things out? The war in Iraq, they rode that out. The terrorist attack, they rode it out. Very, very few people. And so getting back to what we were talking about before, from a behavioral standpoint, a financial advisor can help, you know, ride through volatility like that.
Sure.
Okay. We have less than 2 minutes, and I know you're just really anxious to tell us something.
Well, our compliance department has certain rules when we do these types of things. So there's one thing I need to say here really quick. It's Daniel J. Sipe, CHFABC, Thomas P. Lee. We're both financial planners. We're serving those who serve an independent company. Securities offered by Raymond James Incorporated, a member of FINRA and SIPC. So always have to get those in.
Thank you. You could go on the road and do that, but Andrew says you got one more minute and you're going to be talking to dead air. So
No. We never run out of words.
All right. Final comments in a few seconds.
The thing of it is, wherever you are in your federal career, don't be bashful about getting some help, getting some insight from someone who does this. And there are a lot of people, it's not just us, that can give you that advice. It's going to make a difference. It's going to make a huge difference for you. And you're a great group of people. You deserve to have those types of good outcomes.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, living in this area, you can't help but be touched by the federal government. And as an organization, we're here to help serving those who serve.
Okay. Thanks for listening. Guys, thanks for being here.
Thanks, Bob.
And we'll be back. Have a wonderful Labor Day weekend. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to For Your Benefit, presented by NITP. Please tune in next Monday at 10 a.m. for a topic solely devoted to you, the federal employee. The show can also be heard 24/7 on federalnewsradio.com. Thanks for listening.
This is John Gilroy from Fed Tech Talk. Wanted to tell you about a local company that has had a national impact on airline safety. For the past 3 decades, Electromech has worked with federal agencies to make sure aircraft wiring is safe and reliable. Electromech is responsible for testing, inspecting, and analyzing a wide range of electrical wire interconnect systems. For a white paper on addressing fleet management needs, please visit electromech.com. That's LECTROMEC.com.